Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Craig Couch, and every week it's my job to interview top performers and unlock the secrets of their success so that you and I can apply some of their thought patterns, daily rituals, and strategies to our own missions. This week's guest is Chris Thompson. He is the CEO of Mike Mandel Hypnosis, and Chris Thompson is an entrepreneur, professional hypnotist, and a hypnosis trainer, so he teaches other hypnotists. Although formerly educated in engineering and finance, Chris left the corporate world to work alongside his best friend and hypnosis trainer, Mike Mandel, as the co-founder and co-trainer of Mike Mandel Hypnosis. Chris is widely recognized as one of the top business minds in the field of hypnosis. MMH has over 10,000 clients and is the fastest growing hypnosis training company in the world. And I've been a nonstop student of their work since the beginning of this year. And I wanted to introduce you guys to some new ideas about how to grow personally and professionally through some out-of-the-box techniques. Techniques that I've been using to intensify some of my better qualities and kind of overcome some of my less than awesome behaviors that I want to get rid of, like procrastination. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Craig. It is a pleasure to be here, and this should be a fun discussion.
I agree. Well, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and I heard you mentioned jujitsu, and that is you and I both have a common interest in jujitsu. How long have you been training?
Oh man, I'll give you the quick backstory. So when I was a kid, I did a little bit of karate and then taekwondo, and just little stuff, like never anything competitive, just sort of a fun thing for, you know, a dad to put his kid into. So I love that. When I moved to Toronto I guess it was around the year 2000. Within a couple of years, I really rekindled this interest that I had from university in hypnosis. And I decided I was going to go to whatever the search engine was back then. I can't remember if it was Google or Excite or something. But I searched, I'll just say Googled, Mike Mandel, because I remember that he was from Toronto and probably was teaching hypnosis. And I wanted to find out more so that I could learn and study from the master, the guy that I'd seen on stage back in Ottawa when I was in university, engineering student. But what I actually found was this school of British jiu-jitsu that was run by Mike and another friend of his at the time. And I thought, oh, I'd like to do that. So I immediately signed up for this 8-week class that just blew my mind. I had been doing, you know, like I said, karate, taekwondo. None of it was considered close quarter fighting. And then I learned about this, and it was all about, man, we want to get in close and just, you know, lock a guy up, joint manipulate, neck crank, take him to the ground, ground and pound, it's over, and that kind of thing. And I just thought that this was phenomenal. So I discovered that maybe around 2002, and I haven't, other than COVID, which has interrupted classes now, I just never stopped. So I've been doing it for quite a long time. It's not the classic Brazilian jiu-jitsu or any other style of jiu-jitsu. There are a lot of joint manipulations, but there aren't nearly as many throws or anything like that. And we mix it in. It all comes from the British military history, guys like Bill Underwood and Fairbairn and others. So it's all about strikes using elbows and axe hands and chin jabs and sticking fingers in eyes and neck cranks and all the bad stuff that you can't do in a competition, because you don't really want to hurt these people you're competing against or practicing with. But when it comes down to a real world situation, you want this thing over fast. So there are no rules.
Right.
That's basically the form of, we call it jujitsu, although people who are from a jujitsu background might come in and go, there's only sort of elements of jujitsu. This is a lot of really nasty stuff, but it works.
Yeah. Well, it does something for your confidence too. Cause I studied Taekwondo for quite a long time, and it didn't seem to be that useful. And I didn't really have a whole lot of confidence, and because I was basically useless if the fight went to the ground.
Yeah. Or in close.
Yeah, or in close, right? Because you've got to keep your distance in order to strike. So
you have to have a stance. You have to be able to punch or kick or something. And that's all of a sudden, if we blend into the hypnosis angle, it's a massive pattern interrupt. If all of a sudden you get locked up and you're in close and you don't know what to do.
Yes, completely incapacitated. So I watched these old grainy videos of the Gracies just completely incapacitating these kung fu masters.
Yeah, baiting them into the ground.
Yeah, and they just would lock them up. And I'm like, that looks cool. In the early years of UFC, you know, these strikers had no idea what to do with these guys once they got pulled close. And, you know, all fights end up that way, really. Yeah. They just do, unless you get knocked out.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when I first got introduced to this stuff too, and Mike would have me watch videos of Royce Gracie, and he would allow himself to be taken to the ground and just put them in guard and destroy them.
Yeah, it's amazing. I did it for 3 hours a week for 3 years, like 3 or 4 hours a week for 3 years, and got to a point now where, you know, my jiu-jitsu's rusty. Right. I stopped doing it because my neck was always in pain.
Yeah.
But
it can happen.
But so my jiu-jitsu now is rusty, but like I go into these vacant houses all the time and there's people in there that shouldn't be. And it's like, you know, I carry a gun and I'm just like, you know, I have to be able to defend myself. And pity the fool that wrangles with a guy whose jiu-jitsu is a little panicked and rusty because it's going to hurt him more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially when he's strong and 6 feet tall.
Yeah. Well, so I'd love to start, you know, our discussion, talking about the business side of running a training company.
Sure.
Before we get to, why I'm so geeked out about hypnosis. So let's start with the name Mike Mandel.
Yeah. You can throw as many questions about this as you want. Cause I can, what we call in our podcast, Ken Sweatman, the story, which means talking way too long unnecessarily, or I can give you the tight version. But basically when I was a kid, I had discussions with my dad a little bit about hypnosis and it sounded like something really cool. Of course, I didn't really understand what it was back then. I probably thought that it was power and mind control and all this stuff. Nor I didn't really understand that it was a form of elegant communication, but I knew it was interesting. So when I was a first year engineering student in 1992, I guess it was. Yeah, 1992. September of 92, I was what we call Frosh, first year student for Frosh week. I don't know if you use the same term in Texas, but all over the world, there's that first party week of university. And one of the entertainment acts was Mike Mandel. And I had never seen a hypnotist or a stage hypnosis show. I didn't know anything really about hypnosis. I just thought, well, I've heard about it. And I know because I trust my dad. I look up to my dad, of course, and I knew he was a believer. So I went in with open eyes going, well, this sounds really cool. It must be real. Other people think it's fake. Oh, these guys are fakers. You know, they're all hand selected. Well, I watched Mike pull off this brilliant show. I mean, I'm so lucky that my first experience seeing a hypnotist was Mike, because he's absolutely one of the best in the world. Little did I know that he was, but he truly is. And he was so phenomenal, so amazing, so entertaining and original. And I remember being convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt that none of these people were faking hypnosis, and particularly the kid who was told that he was on a planet and Scotty from the Starship Enterprise was on a coffee break and wouldn't be able to beam him back up to the Starship for a few more minutes, but the planet was going to explode in 10 seconds. And Mike's dual playing the role of Scotty, sorry, Captain, I can't beam you up now, or whatever he's saying, and playing the role of the commentator. You got to tell him to hurry. The planet's going to explode. 9, 8. Tell him to hurry. Tell him to get off his coffee break. Come on, I need you to beam me up. 6, 5, you know, and when he got to 1, this poor kid, I won't swear because I don't know what's okay on this podcast, but he said the SH word. He goes, oh, shh. You know, and I swear this kid was about to pee his pants. And then, of course, snapped him out. It's okay. You're back on the stage. Everything's fine. How are you feeling? Wonderful. That's right. And watching someone's emotions go from this dreamlike, I'm about to be blown up on a planet, to, oh, it's all okay. I just woke up from a dream. It was unfakeable, unmistakable, real. And I fell in love with it at that moment. I knew I had to learn more about this.
Wow. That's incredible. So you graduated from the university, then you went off into the financial world and did that for a season. And I'm always interested in transition, right? I'm curious of what it was it that caused you to want to join with Mike Mandel and leave the security of what you already know?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's quite a length of time between me graduating in 1996 after a 4-year engineering program and then starting a new career in finance, which was several years later because I worked in the engineering field first. When I moved to Toronto, what happened is we were now closer to my wife's family, and because they were always from the Toronto area. And one of her relatives was a smoker, and I knew he wanted to quit smoking. And it occurred to me one day, I thought, you know, I've got a good career in finance. This guy's not particularly well off. Maybe I could just search and find a hypnotist that could help him, and I'll pay for it. That'd be nice. And then, I don't know, a few hours later, it occurred to me, hey, wait a second. I've been studying hypnosis, all informally, all just through books and stuff like that. We didn't even have YouTube back then, really, right? So just learning and doing and practicing. But I didn't feel that I had any kind of therapeutic skills. But I thought, wait a second. Rather than, you know, buy the guy the fish, why don't I teach myself how to fish? And then I can fish for him to finish the metaphor. I was planning on getting myself certified, learning how to do this, and then I could actually help him out. Or I could still pay someone else, but whatever. The bug bit again that had been a bit silent for a while because I was in this career of finance and prior to that engineering, I wasn't formally studying hypnosis. And I thought, I'd like to get certified. So I did. And I ended up, like I said, searching for Mike. I found the jiu-jitsu, which we talked about. And I also found the school that he was teaching at, which at the time was called NLP Canada. He was their hired gun teaching Ericksonian hypnosis. And so I ended up signing up for not only the jiu-jitsu stuff, but an NLP practitioner training that was taught by another guy, Chris Keeler, and Mike's introduction to Ericksonian hypnosis class and full-on certification training class. And that's how we became friends, because I was hanging out with him in jiu-jitsu, but I was simultaneously studying hypnosis in his class. And then fast forward, so this was probably, you know, 2002 or three, when I first got introduced to Mike through the jiu-jitsu and hypnosis training. But it wasn't until about, I think, late 2007, when Tim Ferriss published the book, The 4-Hour Workweek. I'm sure you and many listeners are super familiar with that. And it was actually because I was hanging out with a couple of my hypnosis friends, students from class. And we would, every week or so, we'd get together in the Toronto downtown area. There was this nice underground shopping area that you could, you know, in the middle of winter, you could walk from one building all the way to the other financial center without touching any snow. It was wonderful. And we would meet at a table outside of a Starbucks or something and just chat about hypnosis and mastermind. And there was this one fellow, his name is Julio, and he would always bring some sort of CD-ROM or DVD-ROM that he'd burned a bunch of material that he thought we would be interested in. And one day he comes by, he drops this DVD-ROM on the table, one for each of us, my friend Ron, and me. And he says, hey guys, I brought you this. I filled it up with a bunch of other stuff, but the one thing I want you to check out is this thing, The 4-Hour Workweek. It's the audiobook is on here, and it's really cool. And I remember thinking, what kind of title is that? But I had enormous respect for this guy, Julio. I thought he was smart, he was insightful, and if he tells me that it's something I should listen to, I'm going to darn well listen to it. So I remember going back to my office later that day, sticking the DVD into my Dell computer in my office where I was working as a stock analyst, and sideloading the files to my BlackBerry at the time, and then starting to listen to it on the streetcar ride over to jiu-jitsu class after work. And it blew my mind. I thought, wow, this is an excellent book. And it lit me up in terms of my desire to become an entrepreneur, because at that point, I already knew that I didn't want to be a stock analyst for a long time. It was the kind of thing that was quite grueling. The pay was amazing, there's a lot of money to be made if you're working close to money, but you're working for someone else. It's not particularly fulfilling. You're not really out there helping change people's lives or anything like that. You're just discovering interesting things and writing research. Well, I decided I wanted to get out of that eventually. And so I set on this journey in my mind that eventually I was going to go off and work for myself. And I was going to use the principles that Tim Ferriss taught in the 4-Hour Workweek to start some sort of business. And since the three of us, Ron, Julio, and myself in this little masterminding group of going through the book, had decided we would have some homework. We were going to come back to the next meeting with three business ideas each, what Tim called muses in his book, right? And one of those that I thought of was, well, I've got this friend, Mike Mandel. He's awesome. He's probably the best in the world at what he does, but he has zero online presence, none at all. Literally, the only things that he would sell were shows or keynote presentations. And he had some CDs that at the end of a show, if people had cash on them, they could buy a CD. He had no website, no online presence whatsoever. And I simply proposed, how about I buy CDs from you wholesale? I'll buy a website, mikemandelhypnosis.com. I'll set up WordPress. I'll figure out how to do a PayPal button. And people can at least, when they're Googling your name because they didn't have cash at your show, at least buy the CD online. And I'll just stick it in the mail and send it off from work whenever we get orders in. So he went for that and thought, no problem, that sounds good. And little did I know that was going to transform into what we have today, which is probably one of the largest online training businesses in hypnosis in the world.
That's incredible. Yeah. I think that, first of all, that book had a pretty big impact on me as well. I was already in the entrepreneurial space. You know, I'm kind of one of those guys that never gotten a paycheck. I've just always done my own thing. But that really poured gas on the fire. Oh, yeah. For me, because I was like, wow. And just, I automated all kinds of outcomes came from that book. And then I've listened to, I don't know how many hours of his show, and all of his interviews are just so incredible and so helpful. And he's actually been one of the most influential business minds for me that I could think of. So
yeah, no doubt. I think I would put him in the top tier of business influence minds myself. And I imagine so many other people would too. That guy has changed lives.
Well, it's so cool that you saw the opportunity. You brought this idea to your mastermind and saying, look, I've got this, essentially this incredibly amazing expert or attractive character that has no digital presence,
yeah,
no online presence. And you saw the opportunity because he's quite a bit older than you, right?
Yeah, about 21 years older.
So he's 20 years older, kind of old school, probably really struggled to get the CDs there even. And
yeah, he had help for sure, but yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so there's a part of this that's also interesting, and that's the apprenticeship model, because you saw in him back in college, his talent, then you got curious about it. And what I think is really cool is that you were attracted to it and you wanted to be around it. And so you pulled the trigger and were around it as much as possible and around him to learn. And then when you teamed up with him, I'm assuming, I would say that this apprenticeship model is old school and is also kind of a forgotten approach to learning. How has it been for you?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, you're right. So discovering Mike and discovering how awesome he was compared to many of the other people that were out there, it would be akin to finding some sort of A-plus list celebrity actor who's well known for winning awards, but they were only locally performing on stages. And so most of the world didn't know of this person, right? So if you can go and take that globally, at least to the global market of people interested in hypnosis, which is not the entire population, but there's still millions of people who care about it, then you have a huge opportunity. So Mike is an amazing talent, and I had to figure out how to get him in front of everyone else who didn't already know about him. And we're on our way. There's still tons of people who don't know who we are, which is opportunity, right? But you're right. So I had only done some hypnosis training and reading and studying, but I now get to hang out with and podcast with and co-teach with. And the co-teaching thing evolved. I used to just pretty much sit in the class and come up for some Q&A to help organize the discussion of students. I wasn't really teaching. I was just managing the messaging around how we answered questions, let's say. But because I got to hang around with Mike so much and talk about this topic all the time, it was like osmosis. I could just learn more and more. And every time that he would pick up an interesting new book or a new topic that would come up, he would excitedly tell me about it. When he developed mindscaping, which is a therapeutic modality that he invented several years ago, I was subject number one. I was the guy who, when he came over to my house before us shooting some video, he said, "I got this awesome new thing. Let's do a little experiment. Sit down and I want to run you through this exercise." And, you know, I got to be pretty much the first victim of all of that stuff. So yeah, incredible.
Yeah. And I actually, you know, I've listened to many of your podcasts, and I'm actually getting that vibe. Like I get the sense that in a way, you know, Mike is doing his best to pass on this wealth of knowledge that he has to you. And it feels so generous and kind, you know, because I'm just observing from afar going, wow, this is a really, really a beautiful thing happening right before my eyes as you as the apprentice and he as the expert. Mm-hmm. It's just a forgotten art. And I just admire that. I think that's pretty dang cool.
It is. It's a beautiful thing. It is something also that I don't think you could plan for. This was completely just luck and circumstance. He being one of the best talents in the world and me just having the right kind of technical mind, also having a passion for the topic and having the right personality to believe two key things that number one, I can learn anything I need to learn. I can figure the business side out as I go because I wasn't a marketer. I had no official training other than an MBA where you take some marketing classes, but they're all kind of crap. Nothing to do with digital. And I had this relentless belief that I wouldn't give up. So I won't quit. And I believe that I can actually learn it. So from the technical business standpoint, I'm the right guy. I'm the right partner. And from the talent perspective, he's the guy that anyone would dream to be partnered up with, provided they can deal with all the, you know, the "Hi, I'm 5 years old" attitude that we both like to portray.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you guys have grown this to 10,000 clients all over the world. Could you describe kind of who the people are that most enjoy your, you know, what is your avatar?
Yeah, the customer avatar. I think there are many. I was talking to you just offline before we started recording that I don't think I've done a good enough job yet as a marketer to figure out who the most important avatars are that we should be targeting our 80-20 effort at marketing. But having said that, I would say that there's a variety of avatars. So one is actually you, the entrepreneur, self-employed person, deep passion for self-improvement, improving communication, and somewhere along the way discovered the idea that there's this thing called hypnosis, or in your case, NLP, which kind of can lead to hypnosis in a lot of ways because one third of NLP came from modeling Milton H. Erickson, the best hypnotist probably that ever lived. So people will find us just by being the avatar of the self-employed, I built a company, I love this stuff. I want to learn more techniques on how to improve my own life or communicate better or whatever it is. And then they find us and go, "This is cool. These guys are fun." And that's what happens is people will resonate with us because we are the hypnosis trainers who are known for being the most fun. Well, not necessarily the most, but because there's two of us, it amplifies. And most other really fun hypnosis trainers that we love to hang out with are one-man shows or one-woman shows. They're awesome, but there's a power in having a team, even if the team is two, and it amplifies and it riffs off of each other, right?
Yeah, totally. And I'm so, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's one avatar. Another would just simply be people who are already hypnotists and they want to advance their training. So they've done some training and Where we differentiate is we are very much against the idea that you should take a script out of a hypnosis script book and read it at someone. Mm. It's sort of like, can you imagine going to a stand-up comedy show and having the comedian stand up and open his file folder and pull out, oh, this is the Tuesday night comedy about driving in bad traffic in LA. And he starts reading it at you. It's not interesting at all. You know that you get this unconscious feeling that he's not just interacting with the audience, right? And as a copywriter, in fact, I had a really good discussion with a copywriter on Zoom the other day. And he told me that there is this tendency among copywriters to want to use a so-called swipe file, right? It's you grab good material and you just, how can I build a sales letter with a swipe file? Rather than just actually writing as if you're talking to that audience. So from a hypnosis perspective, a lot of hypnotists start out and they learn hypnosis by reading scripts at each other. And I'm not kidding. Because, of course, anyone not educated or informed about hypnosis probably thinks that makes sense, right? Yeah, there are scripts and these words are magical. And when you read them at people, they go into a trance and then they obey your commands and then they change their lives in amazing ways, or they entertain people on stage in hilarious ways. It doesn't work that way. So what we teach is, yeah, scripts are fine to generate ideas, just like reading a transcript of a past performance might be interesting and might give you some good joke ideas. Let's say if you read the transcript of a comedian or watch a video of a comedian, you'll get some ideas, but you should take those ideas and craft them into your own genuine conversation, right? And that's the way we teach hypnosis. We teach people the principles of having hypnotic conversations rather than having to rely on scripts. So principles, not scripts.
Yeah. And that approach allows you to actually pay attention mm-hmm. to the other person. You're able to attune to them better. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's similar to sales. I mean, you know, you have these sales scripts, which might be a helpful maybe structure to follow. But I mean, being able to see if a person's interested or not takes some bandwidth and can be distracted by
absolutely
some trip. Well, I wanted to shift over and talk a little bit about the podcast. You know, I've been doing this podcast. This is, I guess, I'm not sure which episode this is, but I've done, I don't know, 10 episodes or so. And it's really freaking hard.
It's
not as easy as I thought. I thought it was going to be a lot easier. It is extremely time intensive. And takes quite a bit of effort. And you guys have gotten over 150 episodes working together as a dynamic duo. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. It's hilarious. It's quirky as heck.
Totally.
Totally off the wall quirky.
We are probably one of the only podcasts that makes up our own fake sponsorships in the form of hilarious commercials.
Yeah.
We have a running list of all the nonsense stuff that we've thrown into it. And it actually creates huge moments for Easter egg insertion into our classroom, into even the latest hypnosis recording that we just did, one called Journey to the Castle. Mike released it. Well, Mike and I released it. He wrote it. I helped the recording and the editing and the producing. And it's filled with Easter eggs from the podcast.
Right.
If you did listen to the podcast, they're not going to throw you off. But if you did listen, you're going to kind of have a little chuckle inside and it's going to help.
Yeah. There, you do a great job of weaving all that stuff together. Well, tell me about the purpose behind the podcast from a marketing standpoint.
Sure. Yeah.
And then tell me about that journey, because it is actually the reason that we're having this interview is because, you know, and I'll cover this here in a second, but I found you guys through your podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about that journey.
That is why I'm the self-appointed CEO of this business. I'll tell you a quick backstory on that too. Mike used to introduce me on the podcast. So our podcast always follows the same format where I say something like, "Hi, I'm Chris Thompson. And today on episode such and such of the Brain Software podcast, Mike Mandel and I are going to discuss whatever it is." And then I introduce him always with three things about him. And then he'll come in and talk about me being the 2IC, second in command of Mike Mandel Hypnosis. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to declare myself as the CEO. He's the key behind the content, the genius ideas. But I figured, hey, I'm actually the CEO of the business. And he's just run with it. And we joke that we fire each other and then we just rehire ourselves after all the time. So
yeah.
The podcast. Okay. So I came up with the idea. I believe it was back in whenever it was that we started this podcast. I can't even remember now. I think we started it somewhere around 2013 or might have been 2012, probably 2013. And I had been listening to the Smart Passive Income podcast with Pat Flynn. I almost said Pot Flynn. Pat Flynn.
Yes.
Pat Flynn. Love that guy. I got to meet him once in San Diego. Super nice guy. Anyway, I was listening to that podcast thinking, this is a fantastic podcast. And at the time, there were a few start and stop and, you know, hits and then disappear podcasts on internet marketing in general. I don't even hear people talking about that term anymore, internet marketing. All marketing is moving to the internet, like, duh.
Yeah.
So Pat's was the consistent one. He just had gold nuggets. He was awesome. I loved his show and I listened to it for so long. And then one day it just occurred to me that I should search to see if there are any hypnosis or NLP podcasts. And lo and behold, when I went into Apple, iTunes, or whatever it was at the time searching for them, there were really very few. And most of them were pre-recorded, kind of somebody was just using the podcast store. If you want to, is that even the right title? I don't know. Someone was using the podcast store. I'm going to go with it as if it's right, as a distribution engine for some intro to hypnosis. Here's a sample recording on stress relief or whatever. It wasn't really a podcast the way that, you know, podcasts are now understood to be, either interviews or just engaging dialogue of some sort or sharing of information. It was just like, oh, here's a hypnosis session. By the way, if you'd like more, come to my website and buy stuff. It were crap. So I said to Mike, I think we should do a podcast on hypnosis and NLP and all that stuff. And the idea being me, not yet really a trainer, but really smart at understanding what were the key things that people didn't yet understand. Because I'd been in the classroom so much and I'd seen people asking the same questions over and over, and I'd figure out how we could explain this better or demonstrate it better. And I said to Mike, let's do a podcast. It'll be fun. It'll be just me peppering you with interesting hypnosis questions and having interesting hypnosis and NLP conversations. And it evolved now, of course, into what it is today. It's a much more rich experience. And it's not just me bringing questions. But it started out really as an intention around pure hypnosis and NLP. What it evolved into, and I think that makes sense because the title, just to back up for a second, the title that we chose was Brain Software. And the reason for that is Mike already had a prominent, within the local region at least, a prominent keynote presentation that he would run in the corporate circles called Brain Software. And it was amazing and awesome and so much fun. It was basically NLP and communication principles that he would teach to the corporate world. So we thought, let's just call the podcast Brain Software, because that's really what all of this is anyway. It's just how to run your brain more effectively. And so we started bringing in elements of self-improvement or the idea of building up your schema so that you have the requisite knowledge to achieve the things that you want to achieve. And we turned this into a really fascinating conversation about building an awesome life in general. So if that would be the one theme, I would say if we had to redesign our subtitle, it would be Brain Software, Building Awesome Lives, you know, one day at a time, something like that. It's about having fun and just building an awesome life. That's really what it's about. And so it's not even purely or even majority a hypnosis podcast, except that everything's hypnosis.
Yes, we'll get into that for sure. Everything is hypnosis. I love that. So I went to the same digital marketing. You know, you and I have those common interests of digital marketing. We're promoting different attractive characters. You're promoting Mike, and I'm promoting my wife with her business with Sober Sis.
Yes.
And I've become this in the last 5 years, just a big marketing study effort for sure. And so you and I both went to the same digital marketing conference. I also met Pat Flynn and listened to him speak as well. Very inspirational. I've listened to his passive income podcast as well. And that digital marketing conference was with Ryan Dice.
Yeah.
In San Diego. And there was a copywriting expert, forget his name, teaching on some classic approaches of persuasion. And he mentioned NLP several times, and I never heard of it. And I kept hearing this NLP in this marketing world. And I was like, what the heck is this? So I Googled it, and found out that it stands for neuro-linguistic programming. Mm-hmm. And that piqued my interest. And then I kind of fiddled around, learned about it, and found out that it's the same technique that Tony Robbins uses, for example,
absolutely,
to help change people. So give us an overview of a brief overview of neuro-linguistic programming.
Sure. And my entry to all of this really started around the same time that I got interested in hypnosis, because remember I said that Mike did a stage show at my university in 1992. Well, it just so happens that he was in the middle of reinventing himself. Instead of just as a performer of hypnosis, he was reinventing himself as a communicator in general. And he was starting his own journey in learning NLP. And he came back to the university the next year, 93, and he did an afternoon session for a couple of hours, and it was called Brain Software. He had just designed that. So that speech, which was the starting of me being interested in all of this, is now the title of our podcast and everything, right? Really cool. Anyway, he taught just some simple things in that presentation, just simple things like it's really hard to be depressed if you look in an upwards direction and stand tall and breathe. Like anyone listening, try that for yourself right now. Breathe nice and deep, stand tall, keep your shoulders back, keep your head held high, and just try really hard to be depressed. Now, you'll realize quickly when we say try, we imply failure, right? Try. Notice you can't. Okay, now do the opposite. Slump your shoulders, breathe shallow, look down, and try to be happy. It's really hard. And so simple concepts like how your state is going to be controlled in many ways by your physiology, what you do with your body and your breathing and all of that stuff. So your performance, your state, your physiology, your breathing, they're all connected. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Now that has nothing to do with language, of course. That's just physiology. And then there's all these language things that we discover, things like the concept of a nominalization. So that is we call a noun that you can't put in a wheelbarrow. If you were to imagine a tree, that's a thing that if you had a sufficiently large wheelbarrow, you could put a tree in it, or a house, or the universe, I suppose. That'd be weird. But you can't put love in a wheelbarrow, or connection, or relationship, or transformation, or learnings, or knowledge. These are all things that you can't. They are nouns that originated from verbs, like to know is a verb, right? Or to transform is a verb, but the transformation, that's the thing that you get after something transforms. You can't put those things in wheelbarrows, and they all mean different things to different people. So if you want to communicate with someone, let's say in a sales perspective, and you don't know how they're going to interpret, you're multicasting a message to any reader. It's not one-on-one, right? So you might need to talk about how we all know that there are times that we want to achieve something transformative and truly important in our lives to benefit all of those people who we love around us in an important way that makes our life even more fulfilling. You know, if you say that, it kind of drives trance, because everyone's chasing, what does that really mean? And there's no doubt that it means something specific to every listener. So NLP will use a lot of words like that. But in general, just to back up, NLP is about modeling and uncovering true information. And well, we break it down into four most important parts. Mike tells a story about having lunch with John Grinder, one of the co-founders of NLP, along with Richard Bandler. And the story goes that John said to Mike, what's the most important elements of NLP to you? And Mike said, he thought about it and he nailed it as an acronym that we now call Mr. CC, which comes from CC for combat conditioning, Matt Fury's approach to bodyweight exercises, if you don't know it. MR for Mr. is the meta model. R is rapport. And then the two C's are calibration and congruence. So the idea being meta model is a big foundational aspect of NLP. When people say to you something like, well, I just don't feel very good about that, and you don't know what that means. There's so much missing material. There's generalization, distortion, and deletion in pretty much all human communication. And so in order to uncover the true deep structure of what someone's saying, you need to ask meta model type questions. So I don't feel good about that. Well, which part of it specifically isn't good, you might ask, or which part you might, well, how do you feel? If they say, I don't feel good, you want to transform that into, well, how do you feel? Because, you know, what we don't want or what we don't have is an infinite list. As Mike and I all often joke, if somebody says, well, I don't want to be so depressed. Well, what do you want instead? Do you want to be a tin miner on the planet Jupiter? Do you want to have a dozen root canals, even if they're performed for free by Elon Musk himself? You know, hilarious. You know, do you want to be afraid of carpets? Do you want to have a bonfire in your bedroom? Of course, what you don't want is infinite. And similarly, what you don't have or what you don't feel, you can make the same sort of hilarious jokes about how it's infinite. So you'll often want to ask people positive language. Well, what if you, if it's not good, I don't feel good. Well, how do you feel specifically? Well, I feel hurt. Oh, where do you feel hurt? What made you feel hurt? Who hurt you? These are all questions that you're going to now unpack. And so if I can leave listeners with just one thing, it's that simple concept of ask effective questions to uncover the deep structure of what people are saying to you and find out what they want. And if you do that, you can help a lot of people simply by asking good questions. So that's meta model. R is rapport. That's simply the idea that if you don't have rapport with the person you're interacting with, they tune out. They wish you weren't there. You know, they switch off this podcast and go to another one, even though we can't have a psychodynamic relationship with the person listening. But if they feel that they're in rapport with our conversation, they'll keep listening, right? Makes sense? Mm-hmm. So when you're in any kind of sales situation, any kind of client therapy situation, any kind of teaching situation, you better be in rapport with that other group or person, or nothing happens. They won't be influenced by you. They won't listen to you. They won't respect and admire you. And you basically have no chance of helping them or convincing them or anything like that. So there's the rapport situation. And then calibration, C for calibration, that simply means always be calibrating, right? ABC, always be calibrating. Because if I am like I know that this is an audio podcast, but we're on Zoom, we see each other. And I can get a sense of whether or not this is capturing your attention or, you know, if you're looking elsewhere, kind of hoping, geez, is he going to move on or do I need to find the right time to interrupt this conversation to change the topic? I have to be calibrating. And then finally, the last C is congruence. And that is simply the idea that the message that you're conveying, need the words and the tone and the body language all need to match, right? So Michael often teach this in a class and say, you know, imagine if I came into this classroom this morning and I said to him, to the students, yeah, hi, I'm feeling really good today. Yeah, we're going to have an interesting class. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, I know this topic well. None of that is congruent, right? So congruence is important. And hopefully what people get out of our podcast, Brain Software, is that Mike and I are so congruent about having fun and sharing useful information. So does that answer the NLP question in
more than a
nutshell?
Yes. And it's highly useful because what I've learned about NLP is just the incredible ability that I'm gaining over time and practice about getting clear what people really want. Because it's pretty interesting because people will talk in these macro generalizations. And those are hard to interpret. They can cause misunderstandings, cause assumptions to happen, which can cause any sales deal to crap out. And so it really has helped quite a bit. And it's the challenge is with for me and as I study as a new student of NLP is that it's a pretty wide, broad topic. It seems like it's a little bit difficult to get handles on it. And you guys have done a good job of explaining it to where I can actually grasp some of these concepts and then not only grasp them, but employ them. And one of the NLP, the key principles of NLP, as I understand it, is that the map is not the territory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you riff on that idea? Because that's been super, super helpful to me in my journey.
Yeah, I mean, the map is not the territory is one of these great lines that often people have to think about. It's a bit confusing at first. What do you mean by that? Well, we say things like, if you go to a restaurant, you don't eat the menu, right? Mm-hmm. You use the menu. The menu is a model of what is going to possibly happen in the kitchen back there. And you'll look at that menu, which is a representation, only a model, and you don't eat the model. The model is not reality. It's just a model, and models can be imperfect, right? So especially a picture of food is not the food. You don't eat the picture. You want to eat the actual food. And if you look at a McDonald's commercial and you see that Big Mac and it looks so amazing, then you get the real thing. And it's like, you know, wilted lettuce and whatever. So the map is not the territory. It's just simply the idea that the model is not the real thing. It is only a construct to help you in some way. And so we always say that the test of a model is its usefulness. So if somebody gives you, and often people will give you metaphors. This is how we relate, right? And this is how we actually change our brains. We think in metaphors. Like you just said, you know, in learning NLP, it's really hard to get a handle on it, to grasp it. And you used your hands and you imagine grabbing on a handles, like you're mountain climbing or something. And that is a metaphor for the idea of, in order to learn something, it needs to feel grabbable to so that you could pull it close and truly integrate that into your being. And now that model works for you, might not work for somebody else. And there will be limits to where that model makes sense, right? If you test a metaphor, you can get, you know, nuts with extremes where the metaphor breaks down. It is no longer useful. In fact, we talked about Ryan Dice. And so I'm sure you remember from marketing the idea that there's this customer journey and it's similar to a human to human relationship, right? And so if you put an ad out there and they visit your website and you say, hey, give me this $2,000 right now for this amazing package that I'm going to sell you, and they don't know who you are, Ryan says that's metaphorically like going on that first date and saying, so what do you want to name your, what do you want us to name our children? Whoa, freak out, right? You're creepy. So, but that metaphor breaks down if you really take it to an extreme. So models are useful, and that's a nice model. Human relationship equals sales relationship, but it'll break down at a point. So the map is not the territory.
Definitely not. And it's not the territory, but it's the other people's maps are very useful. Yes. In other words, what I'm learning is the language, right, that people use, the metaphors that people use help me understand their map.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
In other words, if you were tuned in, if you were calibrated to my description of NLP of wanting to grasp a handle physically, you know that I'm a kinesthetic thinker.
Yes.
And then I want to grab that knowledge and I want to hold it close. I even used my hands.
Yes.
And you were calibrated to that idea. And if you were going to sell me something, you would know that you would want to use more kinesthetic type language.
Absolutely.
To resonate with my existing map that you now know about.
Yeah, and exactly. And I love how you brought it up in a sales situation, because most of the time I tend to think of it as therapeutic interventions, right? But it's equally true in a conversation. And I think people need to understand that. If I was doing a therapeutic session with you and we wanted to talk about, I don't know, let's say improving your cycling performance or something, I would maybe guide you through some sort of guided imagery or create a map where there was a lot of tactile sensation-based stuff and noticing breathing and all that. But if I wanted to communicate to you on the idea of this amazing bicycle journey that we could go on together, and there's this tour guide that'll take us through, you know, the mountains in Italy, and we'll be able to, you know, I'm not going to necessarily try to sell you on the idea of the wonderful smells of the wines that we'll be able to have over dinners that night or something yeah, like that. Right. I'd want to talk about, you know, the roughness of certain parts of the trail and right. the climbs and the intensity that we could feel in this, yeah. you know, the sweat pouring off of us as we're gripping the handlebar and making those amazing climbs, something like that. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm just endlessly fascinated with that. And also how it ties in with, utilizing different models in copywriting. Mm-hmm. Right? So when you're creating a sales page, for example, you're not just hitting one, but you're trying to hit several different models because each model could impact somebody differently, which I think is really valuable.
Yeah, I think you're speaking to the idea of modalities. So we have the visual, the auditory, and the kinesthetic, which also include gustatory and olfactory, so taste and smell. And the stats, I don't know if this has ever been proven, but they suggest that 60% of people are primarily visual. And I think 25% primarily kinesthetic and the other 15 primary auditory. And that mic is a primary auditory. You can kind of tell the way. Usually you can tell people enunciate really well. They yeah. love music. All maybe they play guitars or various
yeah.
instruments or
sing. Yeah. Heaven forbid you mispronounce something on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, I got the grammar police all over me.
On totally. Anything. He's on you yeah. all the time.
Well, yeah, hence the we fire ourselves and rehire ourselves.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah. Well, studying NLP led me down this road of self-hypnosis. I wanted to improve some things that I was struggling with. You know, one example of that is that my mind is typically more project macro oriented and a little bit, I don't really like tasks very much. Like I don't get this dopamine hit when I check a box. It's just,
I get that totally.
It's not in me. Right. But
yeah.
And so I was really wanting to make some adjustments there, to where the task, I maybe would get that dopamine hit in a way where I would feel that sense of satisfaction for paying that bill or mm-hmm. calling the credit card company to, you know, do something that, I mean, stuff that feels like it's going to take I'd rather have take a hot poker in the eye than do it.
Yeah.
Those kind of things that tend to be procrastinated. I've found quite a lot of success in the self hypnosis approach to dealing with these things. Can you give my listeners an overview of what hypnosis is and what it isn't?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk also a little bit about how it maps across with NLP, because I think the approach to hypnosis that you'll use for self-hypnosis is much more the NLP overlapping part versus the what we'll call the paternal hypnosis that you might see from old-fashioned stage hypnotists where, you know, it's stare at this watch or whatever, and your eyes are getting tired, you're getting sleepy, you're going to obey every command. And it's part of an entertainment show. Obviously, people who are volunteering are willing to put themselves into that reality temporarily. But that's not what you're doing to yourself. You're not sitting there going, my eyes are getting heavy, I'm going into a trance. I mean, maybe for some people that'll work, but generally speaking, so let's back up to the NLP stuff. And one third of NLP came from Milton Erickson. Richard Bandler and John Grinder modeled three therapists: Fritz Perls, Virginia Satir, and Milton Erickson. And Virginia Satir, a lot of language stuff came out of that because she was really good into family therapy. Fritz Perls, the idea of associate and dissociate. I mean, you could have that, imagine your father's on that stool over there. Tell him exactly how you feel. Now go sit and become your father. And, you know, this whole idea of associating into different positions, first position, second position, that's where it came into NLP. And with Erickson was kind of a different ball of wax. How's that for a metaphor? He would just kind of, instead of getting specific language out of people, he would talk in vague, artfully vague language that would drive people inside and get people focused on that inner sensation, whatever it was. And he would get them into trance that way. So I like that approach for hypnosis and for self-hypnosis. And so what we teach is a simple way to do self-hypnosis is first, you got to know what you want to get out of it. So what's your intention going into this hypnosis session? And so let's say it was, I want to feel good about checking off boxes that are otherwise freaking boring to me, right? Okay. And now you might want to think about, well, what is it? You might want to NLP this a bit. If these boxes were things in your way, obstacles, let's say, what kind of obstacles would they be? You might think, oh, well, they'd be like boulders, little like cube boulders that were creating a blockage in a path in front of me. Okay, cool. So now you can use that in self-hypnosis. You can say, all right, I'm going to go into trance, which we'll talk about in a moment if you want. I'm going to go in trance for 10 minutes for the purpose of imagining the satisfaction of just obliterating these boulders out of my path forward. And I'm going to come out of trance and I'm going to feel just alive and alert and ready to tackle all of the things on my to-do list. So then you could simply close your eyes. You could do some exercises that would drive you into a self-hypnotic state. And you could just visualize, or you could even forget the formal trance part of it entirely, and you'll discover that anything that assumes trance causes trance. So if you simply sit down in a comfortable chair, close your eyes, breathe at a nice appropriate rate, and then all of a sudden begin imagining that if this works for you, everyone's unconscious is going to come up with their own model here, right? But what I imagined when you said check boxes, I thought, well, maybe Craig's meta pattern would be that he'd rather there's the towards and away. So you want to move towards something that is good, but you want to move away something from something that is bad and evil. Maybe you want to move away from these nasty checkbox things. They're just annoying. So you want to put them in the past. So you need some sort of guided visualization that you're going to take yourself through, where you're going to imagine literally just taking these boulders and either throwing them behind you over your shoulders or smashing them with a sledgehammer or whatever's right for you. And then breathing in and feeling that satisfaction of being past them. That might be just one example. There's an infinite number of examples that you might come up with visually or kinesthetically or anything like that. Does that make some sense?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's hypnosis for me has been, the self-hypnosis process is really kind of woven into, because it's all very personal, right? It's very unique to each person, but it's woven into my meditation practice. I'm a praying man. I do a lot of praying, but I've over the years done a lot of distracted praying, where, I'll be in my prayer time and I'll be praying and then I'll start thinking about five or six other things that I have to do. Maybe those check boxes that are annoying me, and then I'm distracted. And so what I've found is that through this process, my focus has just been incredibly good.
Yeah.
And where it's almost like my mind becomes this playground where I can bring in certain things, work on them, and then move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And it's almost compartmentalized is kind of how I see it in my mind, but super effective in making these little adjustments in my day. And it has been, really life changing. These are just techniques that I'm learning and I'm getting better and better at it. The other day, I went into a self-induced trance without intention. And that was the first thing you said that was super important, is that you've really got to know, you really need to have a plan before you get into your unconscious mind. And I didn't, and it wasn't very great. It wasn't very fruitful because I had no real intention behind it. And so it's just been a really cool, journey. I know that people misunderstand hypnosis, and there's lots of stigma surrounded by the word hypnosis. What do you think people are misunderstanding about hypnosis?
I think that people who don't know much about it they imagine that it is some kind of magic that a hypnotist is essentially forcing upon some person, and that they think it's dangerous. They think that you're going to be able to make people do things, which you can't do. You can't make people do anything. They think that it is manipulation, and they misunderstand, of course, that, well, what do you think all sales is? It's an attempt to manipulate somebody. Now, obviously, there's ethics behind manipulation, right? So if we go back to using a metaphor, a hammer is a tool to manipulate a nail, but a bad person could use it to manipulate a skull. Right? Now, that wouldn't be very nice. So you have to use a tool for something useful, something helpful. If you want to be a good person, you want to use hypnosis and influence techniques and NLP and any persuasive language patterns for the benefit of, you know, not only yourself, but maybe in a mutually beneficial way, or in a just in a way that is giving, in a way to help someone else overcome a problem. And if you're a salesperson, hopefully we start with the presupposition that you actually believe that what you're selling is going to enormously help somebody, or you shouldn't be doing that. It's the wrong business for you. So you know that if you are buying a house in your business where you buy houses every year and flip them, but basically put money into them, you know that when you sell that house to the new owner, that you're helping that new owner in some way, right? Obviously. So it is your duty to manipulate the buyer into buying because you know it'll help them, if that makes sense. So if we reframe manipulation into something that simply means to influence people in an ethical way, I know that's not what the dictionary definition of it is, but that's what people think hypnosis gives you, is some kind of weird magic power to be able to control others in a bad way. And that's not at all what it is. And that's why we come back to the idea that everything is hypnotic. Because, oh, my friend Freddie Jacquin, one of our favorite friends in the hypnosis business, Freddie with a Y, Jacquin, J-A-C-Q-U-I-N, in case you're looking for the spelling, he brilliantly simplifies hypnosis as the following: create an emotion and give a suggestion. Now, I don't think he invented that phrasing. I think it came from, oh, I can't remember now where he got it from. Anyway, somewhere else. But I learned it from him, so I'm going to credit him. Create an emotion, give a suggestion. Now, that's not a perfect model. Obviously, models break down, but it's a really useful model in that if I can create an emotion that is you're wanting some sort of close connection, and then I make a suggestion that will lead to you getting that, you're much more likely to go along with it. Now, I can do that in conversation. Is that hypnosis? Well, most people who don't know any better would go, no, that's not hypnosis. Hypnosis is when you say, you know, stare at this coin and your eyes are getting heavy and yeah. No, it's all hypnotic because we're engaging unconscious processes, right? Basically, if you want to boil it down, hypnosis is something that, what we call it, bypassing the critical faculty of the brain, or basically taking the conscious part of your brain somewhat offline so that you can get out of the way of overanalyzing your own problems or issues, and your unconscious processes can just do what they're meant to do.
Oh man, that's a great way to describe it. That is the, I think that's the essence of why I love love hypnosis is that it does
depotentiating the conscious mind. That's the word I was looking for.
Yes, depotentiating the conscious mind, which means that you can set the conscious mind aside.
And yeah, it's just not interfering. You know, the, let's say that there's the person and they're in a store and they really want this thing, but there's this part of them, the consciously internal nagging, oh, but I don't know, you know, this is, what if I screw it up? What if it doesn't turn out? What if it's not as good as I think it is? And you as the salesperson know that they're going to get a great result from this as long as they apply themselves in some way. So you need to talk to them in a way that depotentiates that conscious nagging mind. And the way you do that is by creating an emotion, right? The emotion of the satisfaction. It could be having people imagine the future. And how is it going to feel, Craig, when you've found all kinds of new and important tweaks to the way that you automate your podcasting process such that you get the satisfaction of seeing these new episodes hit the podcast app. And you didn't even have to do all that much work other than talk to fun people. How's that going to feel? Yeah. Oh, that's going to feel great. Right. So who are you going to hire now to help you with that process? There's the suggestion, right?
Yeah. You said, how would it feel? Then you made the suggestion of it's also new to me and so exciting at the same time. And I've found extreme usefulness in it, in our sessions together and just in my personal journey of studying all this, because I think it's a missing link that's always been there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so valuable. Well, yeah,
it's a missing link that it still happens. It's still there, whether you know about it or not. It's just like, if you didn't know about it, you're not using it to your advantage. It's still happening. Hypnosis and NLP are still happening in your life all the time. You're just not aware of it.
Yes. And that's exactly the way I would describe my journey, is this long string of epiphanies and long string of noticing, and calibrating and being aware, has been just incredible. Well, we have gone over on time a little bit. And so I want to wrap this up with a couple of fun rapid fire questions.
All right, I'm ready.
Yeah, you're all ready. I love that, because a lot of people are scared of rapid fire questions.
Like, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to ask them to do long division or something, you know, on the spot. So for you, is it rear naked choke or triangle choke?
Rear naked choke for sure. Yeah.
Oh, I love that one too.
Yeah.
It's my favorite. I have these really long gangly legs, and so I can catch people in the triangle.
Yeah. I just haven't practiced the triangle choke all that much. I don't do as much groundwork as I think I should, but we have all kinds of variations of chokes as well. So blood chokes and air chokes. And we have one that we call the assassin's knot. One day I want to show that to you. It's amazing. Scissor chokes, all kinds of great chokes. Yeah.
I'd love it. Well, so are you a morning person or night owl?
I would say more of a night owl than a morning person, but not the only because I don't like to get up and boom, go to work right away. I like to have my coffee. I like to check my email, delete a bunch of stuff that I consider the junk of the inbox. I like that idea of cleaning out the trash that I don't need to worry about, and then get on with my workout, take the dog for a walk, something like that. And then I usually only start my work day officially maybe around 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. And I'll work through until around the typical hours when the kids are done school, that sort of 4 o'clock time frame. So I have a fairly compressed work day. But what'll happen is by the end of the day, I'll have this idea that, oh man, I want to just have some extra momentum going in tomorrow. So I might have a wave where I want to do some work from maybe 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. But I don't work late into the night. I'll never be past midnight or anything like that. I'm pretty much always in bed by 11.
Well, is there anything in particular that you do without fail every day?
Have my coffee.
Besides the coffee. That's the easy one.
Have my coffee. That's a softball answer. anything that I do without fail every day? Probably not an action, because there's definitely days where I will do no work, no actual work, but without fail, I will be in my head thinking about what I need to do to get to that next level and creating a plan.
Constantly planning on the next step.
Yeah. I think it's a nature of, if you love what you do, you're going to enjoy thinking about it.
Yeah. It's a valid point.
Yeah.
I find myself in that space, fortunately. So besides the 4-hour work week, are there any favorite books that you give away to people or recommend?
Yeah, I would say probably the one that I keep coming back to the most in life is The Bible of Influence. It's Cialdini's book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion.
Mm-hmm. Cialdini.
Cialdini, yeah, with a – it's just a C. It's pronounced cha, but it's Cialdini, Robert Cialdini.
I've got that one in my queue. I have not read it yet.
His more recent book is called Persuasion, which ties in very nicely. So you can buy either or buy both. They're amazing.
That's the one I've read. I've read Persuasion, which is about pre-framing things before they even before you even start selling your pre-framing.
Yeah, there's some, yeah, you're pre-swading people. And a simple one that I do remember only because I have a mug with me of coffee on my desk here. If you engage with someone in a conversation and you hand them a warm drink instead of an ice cold beer, let's say, mm-hmm. although that has different connotations and stuff, but if you hand someone a warm drink, they will have a more warm reception to you statistically than if you hand them a cold drink. So isn't that interesting, right? Another simple one out of that book was, I remember him saying this on stage during his presentation in San Diego. If you persuade someone by talking about a big number, let's say, for example, the distance between the Earth and the sun, very big number, and then you later mention your product price, your premium bottled water costs 20 cents out of a hose, and it's only $4.99. That'll seem really cheap compared to that pre-framed idea of a big number, the distance from the Earth to the sun. So these can be used in sales. He considers that to be more of an unethical use of the term, right? But you'll see the idea of price anchoring when people talk about how expensive it can be to jump on a plane and come to Toronto and study hypnosis with Mike and Chris. And you know that that's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars, but you can study with us online for $47 a month. That seems so cheap, right?
Right. That's awesome. Well, so your time is super valuable. So I'm curious of what the number one thief of your valuable time is.
Oh, it's social media for sure. I use Facebook a lot for business. Obviously, that's our primary method of interacting with students in the community. But, you know, I can catch myself just reading through social media, whether it be Facebook or anything like that, and just spending too much time learning about what's going on out there, and I'm not doing anything. So that would be probably the number one thief of my time. It is far greater than anything else because I don't watch really any TV or sports or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. We're similar in that. That's the thief of my time as well. I've put all kinds of boundaries in place for myself to, you know, I have these little 15-minute reminders. Like if I'm on Instagram for more than 15 minutes, my phone tells me, and I'm like, oh.
All right. You gotta tell me how to set up that feature. That would be brilliant. That would
help. I'll show you. It's awesome because you're faced with a choice.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I need to be done, or ignore limit is the other choice.
Yeah. And especially if you do a little bit of self-hypnosis work around what's going to happen and how you're going to automatically react when that alarm goes off.
Yes.
It's very difficult when you've committed to yourself, and especially if you commit to the people around you too. And, hey, I'm going to be doing this new thing now. I'm limiting my social media 15 minutes. You're not going to want to put yourself in a position where you feel like you failed.
That's right. That's a good point. Maybe I need to do that because then you put ignore limit, and then it gives you three choices for 15 minutes, for all day, or forever. You know,
it should give you a double bind. You know, ignore limit. Is that because you're a failure right now, or is that because you just don't care about life anymore, or something? You're not going to want to select either of those.
Oh man. Well, this has been a super fun interview, Chris, and one that will really benefit someone who's curious about the power of our minds and what role hypnosis can play in gaining access to a whole new level of horsepower. Like I've felt, thanks so much for coming on the show. Do you have any parting thoughts?
I would just say parting thought. I'll leave you with this. The biggest thing that I learned over the years is you have to identify what you want. So if you're going to go into any problem, which is like you were saying, checkbox, you know, I don't like checkbox trauma. I don't want to check off the checkboxes. I want to procrastinate. What do you want? Always remind yourself to frame things in the positive. What you do want, not what you don't want. What you don't want is an infinite list. Figure out what you want and then figure out how to get that.
Awesome. Awesome input. So how do people find you?
Well, the best way to find Mike Mandel Hypnosis is on Facebook. We have our Facebook page there, and you can probably find me personally as well. I don't use my personal profile on Facebook very much, but I'm Chris Thompson on Facebook. You'll find me there. And you can, of course, find us on our website, Mike Mandel with one L, hypnosis.com.
Yeah. Well, subscribe. It's awesome. The amount, I'm freaking shocked at the amount of content you guys have on there. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is. You're talking about our online hypnosis training, the Mike Mandel Hypnosis Academy. Yeah. And it's, we recently, modeling digital marketer, I started offering a 14-day free trial, which is amazing because then people can come in, no risk, see if it resonates. And often I want that reaction, that discovery. Holy cow, there is so much here.
That's exactly what happened to me. Yeah. I'm a part of that customer journey. Well, thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
We will talk soon and maybe bring you back on in a year from now to discuss more about this because we just scratched the surface, man.
Anytime, anytime. Thanks again for having me.
Well, folks, that wraps up our show for this week. If you found this interview helpful and would like to get pearls of wisdom that I've gathered along the way, go to truegritpodcast.com and subscribe to the True Grit blog. You will get short, helpful emails written by yours truly. Included in these posts, you will also get the show notes with links to books, articles, and other cool things I run across. Thanks, as always, for listening to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place. And don't forget, building a company and a life of meaning takes true grit.